Hello and welcome to the Swole Files podcast. I am Levi Wolf.
And I am Abby Murphy, and together we host this podcast. We decided to make this podcast because we are passionate about the people who work at SoftwareOne.
Between Abby and I, we have 17 years of SoftwareOne experience across a number of different roles and locations, and we love getting the chance to dive deeper into the culture of the company.
This podcast is a behind-the-scenes look at some of our friends at SoftwareOne. We call them Swomies. The things they do at work, and even some of their hobbies and activities outside of work.
So whether you're a current employee, a prospective new Swomie, a SoftwareOne alumni, a customer, a partner, or just a friend of the show,
we hope you enjoy this deep dive into the people of SoftwareOne and the things that make them great.
Enjoy the show. So welcome to another episode of the podcast. Today's guest is Jackie. And I have to say, you know, sometimes we get the chance to interview and talk to people we've worked with for 10 years. Sometimes it's our first time meeting them. I think Jackie is kind of in the middle, right? So you've been at SoftwareOne for a couple of years and we've gotten to work with you a little bit, but Abby and I are really excited to get to know you. So first off, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. And likewise, I know we've kind of met in passing, but it's great to just spend time with you guys and have this conversation.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe just because, you know, it's a little bit of the getting to know you, maybe let's start with some of the get to know you questions outside of work and then kind of work our way into what it is you actually do here at SoftwareOne. Does that sound like a good plan?
Sounds great.
Okay. So maybe first things first, for anyone, a really astute listener out there, I know you live in Florida, but I think I remember from previous conversations that you're not from there. You have different accents. So maybe talk us through that.
Absolutely. Always get the elephant out the room. Would notice that I'm not from Florida. So yeah, born and bred in South Africa, and I moved to the US about 5 years ago. So have spent the majority of my life in South Africa. I was born in a sort of relatively small city called Port Elizabeth. It's on the coast. No one kind of knows that town, but the surfers out there would recognize Jeffreys Bay. So it's a kind of, that's my neighboring town, and it's just a sort of sea town famous for surfing and then the motor industry, funny enough. So yeah, that's where I was born and raised, and lived in Cape Town for a few years and Johannesburg for 7 years before we decided to move to the US.
So you mentioned that we moved over to the US about 5 years ago. So tell us about your family.
Right. So when my second daughter was born, so I'm married. I have two girls. They're now 12 and 8 years old. And when my second daughter was born, Mila, we decided that we would like to perhaps explore living elsewhere. And, you know, as a South African, your options are pretty limited, I suppose, for most people. But we could get a sort of visa into Australia or New Zealand, England and Canada are probably the easiest transitions for us. But firstly, I don't like the cold. So like Canada and England were like off the table. Australia and New Zealand are beautiful countries, but, you know, just very far removed. So America really excited us because I just feel for so many reasons, firstly, the culture just being so warm and I don't mean like the climate. I mean the culture. Americans are just, you know, a lot of energy and very warm and appeal to us. But also America is so diverse. So we're like, wow, what a great place to move to. There's so much to see within America. And then, of course, it is the land of opportunity. Well, certainly from our perspective. So my husband and my two daughters, we moved here 5 years ago. Mila was 2.5 at that stage and Sophia was 6.5. And we moved to the US, not entirely sure where to live. We had traveled here before as a family, but more touristy destinations, you know, like New York and California, DC, but we weren't sure exactly where we were going to, you know, live. So when we moved here, we decided to take sort of a midlife gap. And we bought an RV and we decided we were going to do it for about 9 months. And we thought, you know, when are we going to have this opportunity again? We'd sold everything in South Africa. We didn't have jobs coming here. We were going to look for work. we're like, well, let's just take a gap and let's explore this beautiful country and find a place. So we bought the RVs and took what a 9-month journey ended up being a 16-month journey around the US.
Oh my gosh.
And ended up living in Florida, which truth be told was actually the last place we thought we'd end up.
So how many states did you visit while you were doing your gap year and a half, it sounds like?
we ended up visiting 33 states.
Wow. Was Florida your favorite or just where you landed?
No, it's a good question because, you know, where you live and where you vacation are two different things. I mean, yep. I completely loved Montana, right? But I'm not going to live there. It's just too cold. I remember we met someone on the road who lived in Montana and I was just saying to him, this is incredible, mind blowing. And he was like, yeah, but there's, you know, only sort of three seasons in Montana. I said, what do you mean by that? He says, it's June, July, and winter. And I was like, oh, okay, right. And I remember as we were driving along the roads there, I saw these massive poles along the sides of the road, like 9-foot poles. And I said to my husband, I said, wow, what do you think this is for? And he was like, it's for the snow. I said, what do you mean? He was like, that's the snow. Like they've got to like measure the depth of the snow. And these are like, it was just, and I was like, yeah, no, Montana's not on our list anymore. I could not live in a place that has 6 to 7 foot snow.
So were you there in June or July?
Yes, exactly. Well, that's how we timed our road trip, was very much according to the weather. So chasing the sun, we started in August and sort of just chased the sun. So ended up spending December and a lot of January in Florida. And while we were here, we were like, because we spend so much time in Florida, we realized there's much more to Florida than one would think, or certainly in our perspective. I kind of had this very, very bad impression of Florida. I kind of thought it was like either Everglades or Miami Vice, and, which is very wrong. And while we were here, we were like, wow, there's so much here. And it sort of ticked the boxes for us in terms of what we were looking for in where to live, you know, great climate. It was affordable in some areas, good schooling, safe. And while we were staying at one of the RV parks, someone said to us, oh, have you heard of this town called Stuart, Florida? And I'm like, no. And so we decided to drive through it and spend about a week here. And we're like, wow, okay. Yes, this cute little fishing town on the water, you know, no high rises, relatively safe, or certainly compared to where I come from. And we're like, okay, let's keep this in top of mind. And as we continued our journey, we sort of started scrapping places off our list. And I remember I was looking at houses while we were traveling, and I came across a home in Stuart. And I'm going to think I'm mad, but we ended up buying a house online in Stuart when we were like in Yellowstone. And we're like, okay, let's do this. Like, and that we made our way back eventually to Florida about 4 months later.
That's an awesome story. And it sounds like you're much more well-traveled in the U.S. than probably most of us. So we'll have to come back to you for tips.
I think I've only been to like 30 states. I got my work cut out for me.
One thing that caught my ear, which I didn't know before, you said your older daughter's name is Sophia.
That's right.
My daughter's name is Sophia. Do you spell it with a F or a PH?
PH.
Nice. Well, ours is an F, so a little bit different. Oh. But also interesting, my niece is named Mila. So you've got two really good names there. Yeah.
Got good taste.
Yeah. So what are your kids into like at those ages? I'm sure they've adapted well to being in the US, but what sort of things are they into?
Yeah, I mean, Mila sounds very, you know, obviously they've adapted their accents quite a lot, especially because Mila sort of learned more to talk here. So she certainly sounds and is more American than my elder daughter. But they're polar opposites in personality. So Mila, I call her my fire child. She is just fiery on all levels, like emotion and energy. And she's very into like arts and crafts and clothing design, and, you know, she'll take a toy and completely dismantle it or redecorate it, or, you know, a Barbie's never a Barbie, a box is never a box. She's turning it into something. So she's my fiery, creative child. And then I've got Sophia, whose nickname since a young girl has been called Mowgli. I don't know if you know the story, The Jungle Book. I'm sure you all do.
Yeah.
So Mowgli from The Jungle Book. And she's currently actually on a camp in North Carolina in the mountains there. She's part of Boy Scouts of America. And they go on a week-long camp where they, you know, I wouldn't say self-sufficient, but they're certainly quite sufficient. And they, you know, live in canvas tents, and I don't even think they shower the entire week. And so she's my little bush child, as I would call her back in Africa. You know, we lived on a bit of a small holding in South Africa, and I'd like go out and I'd try and call her like, Sophia, where are you? And I'd look for her and I'd find her, you know, somewhere in a bush digging up dirt. And, you know, so that's definitely, she's into nature. They're both, I think, living in Florida. We're very fortunate to live close to the beach and on the water. So they both love the water. And last week we just spent a lot of time on a stand-up paddleboard and paddling, and just had the most incredible experiences with wildlife, like just the manatees and like beautiful rays, you know, manta rays. We're very spoiled with the wildlife that's like literally on our doorstep. So they're both very much into that. And my husband and I too, we just so grateful for what we have here in America. And I think that's also something, like, as you said, we've been privileged to see so much of America. And America really is unbelievably beautiful and blessed with an incredible nature. So we just, as a family, like to take advantage of that.
That's awesome. Was there any, well, that's one more fun question. And then the other questions are fun too, but they're more related to work. is there anything that when you first moved to America, you were like, what? Like any culture shock moments that you recall?
Plenty. To recall them was different, but I remember the shocks a few times. You know, I suppose we also exposed to America from television. So there are a few things that weren't too surprising, but I suppose food in certain areas, you know, especially in the South, like in Louisiana, like gator bites, you know, actually eating gator for me. I think like things you wouldn't expect, like, for example, I never, and this is going to sound ridiculous, but I had a friend visiting from South Africa last week too, and she also didn't know what it was. So it wasn't just me. Is BOGO. Like BOGO is a thing, yeah. I love it. Like buy one, get one free. I was like, this is amazing. Why did they do this anywhere else? That was quite, but as I'm trying to recall them, but yeah, there's certainly nuances that, also, we drive on a different side of the road. There's, you know, different types of food. I suppose just culturally some differences. Gosh, sorry, Abby, I'm trying to be more specific here.
No, I think the BOGO one was hysterical. Yeah, I love that.
That's a great list. So maybe thinking a little bit about the transition to working at Software One, and I'm sure this is going to be a great story. How did you find Software One? You're traveling, you know, in an RV for 16 months. All of a sudden, you end up at Software One. What's that story?
Yeah, well, actually, there was a work transition between that. So when we decided to finally settle down in Stuart, Florida, we realized you obviously have to work, and I sort of found a job in a company called Labor Finders. They are a labor brokering organization. They're in the Southeast predominantly, got 50 offices, and they were looking for, they had no L&D person or team. They in fact had no learning and development, and it was a job that I could do from home. So I started off as their sort of training manager and just set up their department, so to speak. You can't see me, I'm using air quotes. it was pretty, just creating a culture of learning. And that sort of led us into COVID. And fortunately, I still kept my job, just reduced the hours. But after working there for about a year, I realized that there wasn't much opportunity for me to grow. I kind of reached the level that I set it up to a stage where it was predominantly online, and they just were very small and didn't need more. So I started looking. And actually, sorry, you know, Levi, not too much of an exciting story. I literally just found Software One on LinkedIn. And, you know, I kind of gravitate to, I suppose it's by nature of an L&D person, but gravitate to values. So the first thing I looked at was your corporate values, and certainly resonated with me on a lot of levels, and decided to apply. And through, you know, several interviews, my first one was with Renee, who's fantastic. And I think we just, firstly, she's such an expert in what she does. And I could just tell that, wow, it's going to be such an awesome experience to work with her because she's such a master at what she does. But then also just on a personal level, she's a mom. They had a lot in common. I remember we in the interview, her little boy came in the room and she was like, oh, I'm sorry about this. And she put her son in her lap and we had this conversation. And I was like, oh, wow, that's so cool. They realize we're people as well, you know, that we have children and dogs sometimes in our room. And then went through a few, as you know, the process, a few more interviews and was fortunate enough to be offered the job. And that was, it was 18 months ago that I started. Yeah, it kind of feels though that, I don't know if you have the same experience, but Software One is almost like works in dog years. I feel like I've been here way longer.
Yes.
Than just 18 months.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've even talked about it, like feeling like different companies, you know, 3-4 years in, it just feels like you've worked for different places. So, maybe I hope we did this in the right order, maybe to backtrack a step. So what is your current role? Maybe what's the title and what does it actually mean? What do you do?
Sure, absolutely. So I am the learning and development leader for North America. And probably about 3 months ago, there were two of us doing this job. When I first started, Renee was working, same exact title, but she was working with a sales organization and I was predominantly focused on services. Just by nature of the business, I did work a bit more with sales as well in the beginning. But now our jobs have transitioned where Renee has moved over to global sales enablement. I'm now sort of the leader for North America. Learning and development, obviously, you know, in Software One, we have transitioned more into centers of excellence so that we can be more globally aligned. So I report to John Ryle, who's the global learning and development leader, and he actually is in Ireland. My role, I would say there's sort of three main areas. The one is leadership development. So working with leaders either one-on-one, you know, through coaching, or as a new leader comes on board saying, okay, how can I support you as you transition into this role? You know, are there some skills gaps or is it about getting to know your team better? Or, you know, maybe there's nothing, but I'm here as a sounding board if you need me. The other aspect of leadership development would be the more programmatic approach where we've got various leadership development offerings, such as the Leading at Software One workshop or the New Leader Program, where I would actually run those, develop those programs. Emerging Leader would be another program. The other sort of core focus would be team development, and that's where you are a new team perhaps coming together, and I do some engagements that would enable sort of, you know, meaningful dialogue or just to get to know you, like Strengths Finder, or perhaps there's something more tactical that your leader has identified that we need to work on. Maybe it's creating a culture of feedback within the team or understanding your communication styles. So I'd work with teams on that, with that. Like as an example, at the moment, I'm working with Joella's PMO team, which is quite a big group, about 40 people. I'm working over sort of 3 or 4 months on the topic of emotional intelligence and just designing learning experiences that enable us in this area. And then sort of the third main arm would be professional development. This is something I'm responsible for on a global scale. So on a quarterly basis, we identify a core skill that would meet sort of multiple functions in the business. What that means is not just for services, it's not just for sales, it's for anyone where they are in the organization, right? So Q1, we focused on radical candor. Q2's been on owning your career. And in Q3, we were visiting Radical Candor, but from a different lens. So what my role is there is to design the workshop and deliver it globally with a team, of course, because I can't do it everywhere and in all time zones, but to sort of identify what the need is and then to deliver it on a global basis. And I suppose there's one more facet of my job, if I think high level, and that would be just a cultural ambassador of Software One. So what can I do to drive culture, to live out our values? That would come in maybe from an onboarding experience, but even if I'm like, at big events like Mid-Year and Accelerate, what are we doing to make sure we're living out our values? If I identify that one of our values is not, I wouldn't say being met is not the right word, but that needs polishing or we need to work at, I think about how we can bring that into the organization, our conversations and our engagements. Does that make sense?
Yes, that is a lot. That's incredible.
Yeah, that's probably the best description of L&D from Software One that I've ever heard. That was great.
Yeah. How did you get into L&D? Is that something that you've been doing for a while or is it something that you evolved into via other channels?
Well, actually, that's quite an interesting story.
There you go.
I call it my quarter life crisis, right?
Yeah.
So I first studied a business commerce degree. I was doing focusing on economics, which was a really bad idea. So I did that for about a year and was really like, I'm not good at this. This is torture. So I decided to take a gap year. I lived in London for a year, traveled, worked as a waitress. Eventually after a year, my mom is saying, Jackie, you need to come and study something. Just get it. I'm like, okay, I agree with you. So I started studying, I did a degree in communications, very broad, but a lot more in line with my strengths. And after I finished my degree, I ended up working in marketing and eventually became like the marketing manager for a private hospital group in South Africa, in a region. And I was, not to blow my own horn, but I was doing pretty well. At 26, I had the good office, I had a great job. And I'd been in this company for about 3 years by then. And, I was ticking all the boxes, but something inside of me was just going, is this what you're going to be doing for the rest of your life? Like, and nothing wrong with the job or marketing, but I felt this sort of like internal like conflict that this is not quite what I should be doing or what I want to be doing. So in true Jackie fashion, I decided to change and I moved to Cape Town at that stage and decided to just do a postgraduate. Well, it wasn't actually that seamless. I actually moved to Cape Town and no idea what I wanted to do, but I needed a break. I needed to take time to reflect and pause on who I was as a person and what I really wanted to do. Because prior to that, I was kind of just doing things that I thought I should be doing and what people around me thought I should be doing, which is not bad, but I really needed to take the time to reflect on who I was, what I was good at, what was important to me, and where I wanted to go with my life. I did a lot of reading, and I suppose by doing that, I was exposed to like books on personal growth and business development, and I was like, oh, this is interesting, and was like, oh, this can actually be a career. Like, wow, I could actually share this with other people, and I can learn at the same time. And so I ended up doing a postgraduate few certificates in coaching and sort of decided. And I think by nature, South Africans are quite entrepreneurial. We don't really have a lot of job opportunities either. So it's almost out of necessity. We've got very high unemployment, like 40%. So kind of out of necessity, kind of out of spirit, I started my own sort of consultancy and picking up jobs here and there and learned this trade, as I went along, whether it was coaching people or getting some corporate clients where I was training, doing training workshops, and ended up, falling into a career in learning and development and worked for myself for about 10 years before moved to America and, found Software One.
I think I want to tell everyone to listen to this podcast for the first half to get you have such a great appreciation for like the US and for nature that I think a lot of people don't have. And I want people to hear that. And then for the second half, like that story you just told about finding your way and not, you know, doing what other people wanted and just taking, you know, control of your own destiny. I think, man, we're giving out life advice here.
I know. Also love, like, it's like, oh, I'll learn to do that. Like, that's, I'll pivot. It's no big deal.
I'll just read some books and go to school. And that's awesome.
Well, thank you. That's very kind. I often reflect back and say that was probably the bravest and stupidest thing I've ever done. Like, there was bravery, I suppose. There was courage in doing something different. But you could have done it smarter. Absolutely. Was I an overnight success? Definitely not. Like, but I think a lot. Yeah, I kind of think you've got to be brave sometimes. It doesn't mean it's always going to be the smartest thing, but taking a risk has always helped me. And moving to America was a massive risk. But I suppose at the same time, you've got to just think about, well, what's the worst that can happen? You know, if we hated America, we could move back home, right? It would be tougher. Yes, we would have to start again. Likewise, changing a career, what's the worst that can happen? You can go back to the previous career. And even that time I took to explore, it was tough. Don't get me wrong. There wasn't a light bulb moment like, aha, I should be doing this. I had to ask a lot of questions. I had to eat a humble pie. I remember phoning, like, I was interested in a lot of things. I've always joked that I was a Jackie of all trades, a master of none, right? And so I was like, oh, you know, there was no clear pathway that I should be doing this. So it was like, okay, well, pick up the phone and speak to someone who does that and ask them what it's like. And I did. I remember phoning. I've always loved clothing. And that's probably where my youngest daughter gets it from. And I remember phoning like the fashion editor of Cosmopolitan magazine, you know, going, hey, can I just talk to you about your job? And she was willing. And I think that's also what people realize, is that people who are passionate about their career love to talk about it, and they want to help you and they want to mentor. And that I was really exposed to that when I did this sort of exploration. And yeah, I mean, going back, I think I could have probably chosen, you know, a better way of doing some things, but that, especially running my own business, it was a lot of trial by fire. And, but I feel that has served me well. You know, all those lessons were building bricks and creating a foundation that I could, you know, go from, if that makes sense.
Yeah, we were talking to another guest on our episode, and she started a business, and she said it was basically like getting an MBA.
Totally.
I learned so much, yeah.
I definitely don't need to spend $100,000 in a Harvard MBA. I've got 10 years of running a business. And all those mistakes taught me many things. I think that's also something that we try and avoid failure, but failure is often your greatest teacher. And, you know, I think I was probably more unsuccessful than successful as a business person. But in the end, that helped me it helped me today.
Yeah,
I feel like that's, you know, you mentioned that you don't spend as much time as Renee did with the sales folks, but you gave two really good pieces of sales advice, you know, on failure and then on what's the worst that could happen. I think as a salesperson, I always think about those things like what's the worst that could happen here? You don't get the sale, like,
and then what would happen? And then what would happen? I have to ask myself that all the time to kind of level set and, you know, keep the growth mindset.
Exactly.
And I was going to mention, just going back to when you were describing your role and you were talking about working with teams and sometimes there's, you know, StrengthsFinder or other things. I can't remember if I told Abby about this, but I was part of a session you did in Milwaukee, and we did the DISC profile, which was like, maybe some listeners will know, maybe not. We don't have to go into it.
But this is new to me.
Okay. What I remember distinctly is there's these four colors and you take this test and everyone kind of falls into some, you know, one of these categories. There's different scale. And to make a long story short, I was in the blue. And as they were describing these different things, the yellow color, I immediately thought of Abby, was like the poster child for yellow. And I remember talking to Jackie.
I want to take this test now.
Yeah. And it was just like one of those things where explains how Abby and I work so well together, is like we're kind of opposites in these two areas. Like she's got all the strengths from this category. I've got some strengths from this category. And that just really clicked for me. So
And yellow and blue together make my favorite color green.
Yeah. So, I mean, is that the type of thing, Jackie, where you see a lot of that, like, clicking in those workshops mm-hmm. and, like that conversation we had of, like, oh, this totally makes sense. Abby is this and I'm this.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I mean, that's one of our favorite profile assessments that we like to do with teams. And I love that you could connect the dots. So just to give some context, so Levi's more on the steadiness and the yellow sort of the conscientiousness, which is very detailed orientated, very, you know, precise, quality, reserved, whereas the steadiness is very consistent, persistent, also quite reserved. But one is more people orientated, one is more task orientated. But that is, I suppose, those light bulb moments, those where you see people reflecting in a workshop and they're connecting the dots is very encouraging. And yes, you do see it, even with StrengthsFinder. I was speaking to someone at Software One about my job, and you're saying, like, do you need to know a lot of things? Like, it sounds like you've got to know, like, a lot about a lot. And I was like, well, yes and no. Like, yes, I've got to know certain frameworks and tools, but the real learning comes from the insights that people have when I just show them the tool. I don't tell them what to learn. It's about when they make those connections. That's where the real learning happens, you know, where you share each other's strengths or you understand each other's DISC profile. Like, I get very high level, like, this is what it is. But you start putting the pieces of the puzzle together, that's where the magic happens. I don't need to know everything, but just a few things that I believe I've got to identify what would be the most helpful framework for this particular conversation and share it at a high level and almost then hand it over to you and sort of coach by asking certain questions. So where I feel I need to be, strong is maybe not the right word, enabled is asking the right questions and identifying frameworks. But yeah, you do see it, especially with DISC and StrengthsFinder. And that's why Renee and I are such big advocates of those particular tools.
Well, if anyone couldn't guess, Abby is the people person, I'm the tasks person. That's a great way to describe it. I don't know. Do you want to take the next question, Abby?
Yeah. So one thing that you mentioned about what it kind of falls into your responsibility or something that you're really mindful of is, you know, if we need to, you know, polish up on the core values or, you know, make sure that we're living those. What do you think it is that's so unique about the Software One culture and the values? Can you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. Absolutely. I think the one value that comes across so strongly at Software One, which probably makes it the organization it is today, is passion. And it's probably the one that really, like, there's two that speak to me the most, passion and humility. But I think our passion is, like, contagious, and it's tangible almost. Like, when we get in person at Accelerate or even an offsite like we've had, Levi, in Milwaukee, you could just feel the energy and the passion of the people. And I think that's what excites me. And I think it's what drives us. We love what we do. We're passionate about what we do. We're passionate about people. We're passionate about our customers. And, you know, do we still have a lot to do and work and grow? Of course, yes. But the fact that we've got this desire, we've got this passion for it, gives me the confidence that we will get it done, you know? So that's certainly the one that I feel is unique and exciting about our company.
I think, did you use the term like cultural ambassador or culture ambassador before? Yeah. How do you find that you do that? Do you give people examples or do you talk about what we do or how do you share the culture?
So I think there's one where you do it consciously and almost then, you know, subconsciously. So I think consciously I would deliver to it in like the onboarding experience. Like I ran a workshop with our new employees on our values and really give tangible examples of what it looks like, what the expectations are when we say, this is what speed is. Like, this is what we expect from everyone when we refer to the value of speed. This is how we can hold ourselves accountable to this. So there's quite a sort of tactical approach to our values. And of course, even those little things we do when we start a presentation and we show our values, that's just another practical way of how we reinforce them in quite a tactical way. Also, subconsciously, perhaps is not the right word, but on another level, how I would say I try and bring these values to life is, you know, living them out. I suppose, you know, in my day-to-day work, being disciplined, showing integrity, focusing on my customers, being humble. And I suppose where, you know, from a leadership perspective, you know, working with leaders and holding ourselves, you know, as a leadership team, you know, holding ourselves accountable and being brave enough to share feedback where I say, hey, listen, as a company, you know, part of my role a lot of the time is to reflect and give feedback. You say, listen, as a company, I feel that we're saying this, but we're not doing that. You know, let's work on that value. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah, that's a great answer. I love it. You kind of have to be like lead from the front, show them what it looks like, and then also holding the team accountable and being willing to challenge someone on something is crucial. I'm trying to see. I think we've gone through. Oh no, Levi, you had a question about visiting the Milwaukee office, right?
Yeah, I was. So we kind of referenced that a couple of times. Maybe it was a month or two ago by now, but Jackie was in town and part of the team, one of the teams I'm on, we did some workshops. And so I just was curious, you know, what was your feedback on the new headquarters? Like how did you like it? What was, you know, the culture, the vibe you picked up from being there?
Okay. Well, firstly, I completely love it. It is such a stunning place. Like just in aesthetically, it is so beautifully designed. And yeah, it's really, I mean, you walk in there and I was super impressed. I wish I lived in Milwaukee just so I could go to the office, but it's too cold for me. So yeah, as you
only
know,
in June, July, right?
I'm in summer. But yeah, I think just it's a really great space. I love the downtown area too. I love that it's part of the rejuvenation of that area. So just very cool, to be honest. Then of course, I think just when Swomies get together, there's always good vibes and you can feel that. I do believe we can work virtually and in person and different dynamics come to play in both areas. But I do love going there and just having the flexibility and the freedom to go knock on someone's door and say, hey, give a quick chat, or bump into them at the coffee station and go, oh my gosh, so nice to see you in person. How's things going? You know, those sort of water cooler moments, that's, I love that. And obviously you don't get that when you're working far away.
Yeah, that's great. And we're going to have some in-person moments in a couple weeks together too. Yes. I think all of us will probably be in Indianapolis. Well, I think we covered a lot. And like I said, I feel like I need to refer people back to this episode just because there were so many great things we talked about. You probably don't know this, but you even teased our next guest because we're going to have Renee on. She'll probably be the episode right after you. So that you talked about her. That was a good intro. Perfect. Any last things from your side, Jackie, that you wanted to cover that we didn't get to, or anything you want to close on?
No, absolutely. I mean, this is your show. I don't know if there's anything more you'd like me to touch on, but it's always just great to connect with Swomies. And thank you for the opportunity to just chat to you.
Yeah, this was such a treat. It was great to get to sit down and get to know you better and learn more about what you've got going on. So thank you.
Pleasure. Anytime. I'm looking forward to seeing you guys in Indy. We have been working very hard on the program for mid-year. So I'm super excited about it. It's going to be full on, but it's going to be great.
That's been another episode of The Swole Files. Music, editing, and mixing by Brandon Avenger.
And we love to hear from you. So send us your feedback and future guest recommendations. We're on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, so be sure to subscribe to never miss an episode.